So this is Narada Muni is telling the story of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad to Yudhishthir. And on the last verse of the previous chapter, Maharaj Yudhishthir inquired, because previously Narada Muni was describing how Prahlad was an exalted devotee, a saintly person. He used the word sadhu. He was a sadhu. And he was a very small boy. And then Maharaj, and they describe all of his qualities. Then Maharaj Yudhishthir is inquiring from Narada Muni. He says, "O best of the saints among the demigods, O best of the spiritual leaders, how did Hiranyakashipu give so much trouble to Prahlad Maharaj, the pure and exalted saint, although Prahlad Maharaj was his own son? I wish to know about this subject from you. A father and mother are always affectionate to their children. When the children are disobedient to parents, the parents chastise them, not due to the enmity, but only for the child's instruction and welfare. How did Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad Maharaj, chastise such a noble son? This is what I am eager to know." Maharaj Yudhishthir further inquired, "How was it possible for a father to be so violent toward an exalted son who was obedient, well-behaved, and respectful to his father? O Brahmana, O Master, I have never heard of such a contradiction as an affectionate father punishing his noble son with the intention of killing him. Kindly dissipate our doubts in this regard." So, after describing the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, now Yudhishthira is wondering, how is it possible? And this chapter 5 is beginning of the story of Prahlad Maharaj. This is where we hear about Prahlad Maharaj. He goes to school, and he's being taught what Prabhupada describes, politics and economy. And he didn't like this so much. He was, externally, he was listening, and he was repeating. He was a good student, but internally, he didn't actually listen so much. So Hiranyakashipu calls him to his lap. "Please, my dear boy, sit on my lap. Okay, what's the best thing that you learn in the school?" And what did Prahlad Maharaj say? Yeah, these are the famous, I was just reading this chapter. It's a famous verse, especially for Grihasthas, Griham Anda Kupam, the dark well of married life, and all this. They're famous verses in this chapter. So Prahlad Maharaj says to Hiranyakashipu, "First of all, the sense enjoyment, the life that you are pursuing, that's no sense, has no meaning. That's foolish to live like this. To identify with your body and trying to enjoy, that's foolish." And this, you remember, that was Hiranyakashipu's goal. And the second thing that Prahlad Maharaj says to Hiranyakashipu, "You should go to forest. You should go to forest, leave everything, and you should just go to forest and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari." And Vishnu is Hiranyakashipu's enemy. So Hiranyakashipu cannot hear that, says this is really too much, something must be wrong. And then he sends him back to school. And then the teachers inquire, and she says to teachers, "Okay, just check him out. What's happening?" And now the teachers are asking him, "Was this, how did you come to this conclusion? Was something that you kind of figured out by yourself? Or was it taught by you by the enemies?" Parakrita. Para means enemy. And this is the question they're asking him now. And it's interesting, in Sanskrit, you have always this, they are addressing him as Kula Nandana. Kula means a family, Nandana, very dear son. They're very affectionate, they're addressing him very affectionate, showing that, okay, we are your teachers, Guru Nam. And it's implying, although there were two teachers, what's the name of the teachers? There were two teachers, but here uses the plural, meaning there are more. He had more than two teachers. So, we are all your teachers, implying that, I guess there were more teachers than two then, there, because it's plural here. So, we are all your teachers, we like you very much. Please tell us. Because they were astonished that such a small boy could be such an exalted, as Prabhupada says, Vaishnava philosophy. So we see here, and Prabhupada was specifying earlier, although it's not mentioned in the Sanskrit, Prabhupada gives in translation that two specific subjects that Prahlad Maharaj was taught was politics and economy. And Prahlad Maharaj didn't like this very much. And in one lecture, I was preparing for this class, Prabhupada in one lecture mentions that Hiranyakashipu wanted his son to be a politician. Because he was a politician, he was a king, he was a ruler, and naturally wanted his son to be the same as he was. So you see that, and I want to come to what's the main point of my class today, I want to speak about education. And you see that education always has an agenda. Prahlad Maharaj was sent to school by Hiranyakashipu to become a politician, to become a ruler. So there was an agenda behind his education. And the two subjects, politics and economy. Politics, and then Prahlad Maharaj objects on grounds, and in the previous verses, Prabhupada speaks about why did Prahlad Maharaj didn't like politics. Does somebody remember why did Prahlad Maharaj didn't like politics? Yeah, this duality is like politics always involves you my friend, you my enemy, and Prahlad Maharaj objected to this. And the verses afterwards, you will see that he speaks about this duality of friends and enemy, because Vaishnava naturally sees, Prabhupada quotes, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavi Hastini, this Samadarshina vision that you see equally. Or in other words, you treat everybody with the same respect. You treat everybody as you want to be treated, because the needs of others, the wishes, desires matter as your desires also matter. That's a vision of a Vaishnava. And I found an interesting verse in Yoga Sutra. It's a very similar verse, speaks about how a yogi should behave. It says, by cultivating an attitude of friendship towards those who are happy, compassion towards those in distress, joy towards those who are virtuous, and equanimity towards those who are non-virtuous, lucidity arises in the mind, lucidity or sattva gun. And then the commentators explain further. Why should one cultivate friendship towards those who are virtuous and happy? In other words, those who are better off than we are, in a way. The commentators are saying, because to get rid of envy. Usually when people have more than we have, we feel envious. And to get rid of this envy, one should cultivate friendship with those who have more than we have. And then the commentators are saying further, by compassion towards those who are miserable, that is, by wishing to remove someone's miseries as if they were one's own, the contamination of desire to inflict harm on others is removed. So by being compassionate, one actually gets rid of desire to harm others. By equanimity towards the impious, the contamination of intolerance is removed. By thus removing these traits of envy, desire to inflict harm, and intolerance, which are characteristic of rajas and tamas, the sattva natural to the mind can manifest. So by getting rid of all this envy or desire to harm others and cultivating compassion, one gets rid of all these lower modes like rajas and tamas, and then gradually sattva arises. So this is why one should try to behave in such a way, not be caught in this duality, friend and enemy, which is natural for politics. Politicians have this. If you see the politics today, it is interesting to travel. And then for example, this year I was in Russia, and how Russia is portrayed in the West. And then you go to Russia and then you hear different things. Or it's very interesting to see this duality, how we see things, how he's my friend, he's my enemy. Another thing is economics. And, economy, the different economical theories and like free market, and it's and more or less all of them are brought forward for betterment of the society. So it is said. That's the purpose of economy. How great is good for the greatest number of people. But Prahlad Maharaj was not interested in that because he was a devotee. And you can see in that the education always has this hidden agenda to form the consciousness to impart to the people or to the students, to the children, the knowledge, skills, and values what the generation that's preceding them wants to impart onto them. In other words, education has this purpose of influencing children to think, behave in a certain way. That's the purpose of education. Always was and always will be. Like when you see, the present system of education that we have, like schools. There was always some form of education, like in ancient Rome. The purpose of education was to educate the upper echelon of the society, the noble, and to rule. Education was not provided for everybody, in a way, because it was not necessary. But for those who were noble, aristocrats, to help them to rule. They were educated to rule, to become kings, politicians, they were given education, not everybody. Or like the present system of education that we have, it was very much influenced by the Industrial Revolution in late 19th century or mid-19th century, because before that, there were no factories, more or less. There were no factories. But when the factories came, there was a need for workers in the factory. And then owners of the factories tried to recruit former farmers to work in the factory. But for them, it was very difficult to adjust to the rigid system of the factory. They were too independent. It was difficult because to work in a farm and to work in a factory are two different things. You are your own boss in the farm. Whereas in the factory, you follow certain rules. It's very difficult for you to adjust to this. So then the system of education was devised. Okay, let's bring children and bring them into this system of education where you sit, you listen for a class, you follow certain rules, and then you become a worker. You become an industry worker. You can fit easily into the system. That was the purpose of education. And very much if you read some books on education, this is presently being critiqued by some authors. This system of education, creating workers for industry, for factories. And another purpose of, if you see, you can get a PhD today and you don't have to know how to kind of fix the light bulb or change a tire on a car. You can get an easily PhD without any practical skills. I was a couple of weeks ago. I was watching an interesting documentary about Amish coming to West and meeting their contemporaries. They were teenagers, 18, 19, 20. And because in Amish tradition, they have, when the children are grown up, parents or the community gives them the option, okay, you can go outside of our community, you can go and explore the world. It's called Rumspringa. And literally means it's actually Dutch word, but it's very German. German means to jump around. So they can jump around a little bit. They can explore the world. And after, they can decide, Amish life is for me, Amish life is not for me, I don't want it. And big majority of them actually comes back to the community. So they went to school. They went to English school. They came to England, they were in Scotland, they come to experience how the British teenagers are living. So then came to school and to see how the school system is functioning here. So they were, and then they were questioned about American Revolution. And they didn't know what was that. They were Americans, and they didn't know what was American Revolution, what happened there. Said, American what? They were completely unaware. Or let's say global warming. Said, what? That's global warming. We don't know about that. They are completely unaware about this because they have completely different system of education. The main purpose, and they were explaining, the main purpose is just to learn how to read and write, basic arithmetics, and then what's the most important thing, what they learn, it's practical skills. And they say the purpose of education in Amish community is to equip a person with the skills that that person is able to maintain himself later in life. To give them this basic skill to maintain a family for a man. For a woman, they have a slightly different education. And it's a clear separation there. I was astonished. Why? Because their system on education is underpinned by different values. To live simply, off the land. And there's no need for a farmer to know, you can say, about American Revolution. There is no need for a farmer to know about quantum physics or quantum mechanics. There's no need for that. When I think about the things that I learned in school, because I come from Croatia, which before that was Yugoslavia, which was a communist country, and the things you learn, and the things are so irrelevant now. You learn about Marx and Lenin and all this stuff, and it's completely irrelevant for you. Because this system of education was also underpinned by some system of values. And the present system of education is also underpinned by some system of values. What these values are, what do you think? What are the values that underpin the current system of education? What's the purpose of education? Why do we send children to school? And what's the purpose of this education? Equal opportunity. In what sense? The thing that you mentioned, full potential. Yeah. Something else? How to enjoy? Exactly. Yeah. We are taught how to fit in, not question. Yeah. How to get ahead? Yeah. Lots of respect and money. And you see, universities nowadays, because I studied at British University and I was an international student, which pays a higher fee. And you see, universities are now actually a business. It's a business for making money, and they want to recruit international students because they pay more. And it's about recruiting and creating university degrees graduates that after they finish university, they don't have a job. So therefore, there are a lot of things that Mataji mentioned before to fulfill our full potential. But what is our full potential? Like Prabhu was mentioning, the present system is not teaching about our divine nature, or let's say it's something differently, that there is something different than matter, something spiritual. Not, you cannot say about religion, but there is something different. There is a different option. So if we are teaching only about material options, then is this our full potential? So, therefore, you have many alternative systems of education. You have a philosophy of education. They have different approaches, like Rudolf Steiner. His approach was to engage the head and the heart. And the emphasis there is a lot on skills, developing skills like art, like music, and engaging children in a different way, in a different environment. So there are different approaches to education. Like Socrates had this saying that basically there are two kinds of education. He called one was just trivial. Trivial, what does it mean by the word trivial? It means you learn when was the October Revolution, when was the American Revolution. I know somebody, I won't say, somebody used to call me Mr. Trivia because... Because I used to know a lot of facts about this, which are actually useless. When you see, and I used to watch a lot of quiz shows, and then I was doing this and that, and I remember I was in the army, and I became a devotee, and I was drafted into the army. And there was a question, everybody was watching this quiz show, and there was a question about one desert, I think is in Africa. And I said, Kalahari! I said, oh, you Hari, what do you say? It's not Hari, it's just joking. And then the answer was Kalahari, and everybody looked, oh, yeah. Thinking, but so many things you learn which actually not, they don't have any substance for you. So that's trivial knowledge. And the second most important purpose of education is, which is not done today, is teaching people how to live. Is how to live a good life. And that was, for Socrates, that was the purpose of education, the actual purpose of education, how to live a good life. Then, of course, you have to define. And then there's a big debate, what is good? That's a completely another issue. So this was my point, that education always has a hidden agenda under. There's always... No matter what kind of system of education, it's underpinned by certain values. And this, Prahlad Maharaj, a devotee, comes into this system of asuric education. Now the word, usually how Prabhupada translates the word asura is demon. And it's a common translation. But literal translation from Sanskrit would be actually ungodly. Sura and asura. Sura means godly, and asura means ungodly, or theistic or atheistic. That's, if you take Sanskrit, that's a literal translation. So he was sent into this ungodly education, and he was a devotee. And he didn't like it so much, because this is not what he wanted. So, and therefore you see, Prabhupada was very much opposed to we know how, which words he used for present educational institutions. He called them slaughterhouses because they kill the spirit. They kill the soul. Like Prabhu was mentioning, they are preparing children to fit into this materialistic society. Therefore, Prabhupada was very much opposed. And he had this idea of Gurukul, of a different kind of education. He was mentioning that and so many universities around the world, but where is the institution that teaches about the spirit soul? This type of institution is lacking. If you take the word education from Latin word, does somebody know what the word education means? Yeah, it means to bring out what is already within. And if you take our approach to if you take Vaishnava slant to this, our understanding is that love of Krishna is already within the heart. It just needs to be brought out. And that's the main principle of sadhana bhakti. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, this is how Rupa Goswami defines sadhana bhakti. Krita sadhyatsa sadhana abhida nitya siddhasya bhavasya parkatyam hridi sadhyata. That it's in the hridi, it's in the heart, and only needs to be brought out. And that's the process of education, or sadhana bhakti, educating living entity how to love God. And it's a very systematic process. It's a very systematic process, and we should learn that. This is the purpose of sadhana bhakti. Learn how to love God. And another, and you may think it's a minor point, but it's a very important point, because there are some different, also in Vaishnava circles, there's a group of, say, Vaishnava group that consider that love of God is something external to us. And this love needs to be imparted on a disciple from a realized guru. You may think it's a minor point, but it's a whole discussion about this. But no, love of God is already in our heart. It's just unmanifested. You may, in the introduction of Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada writes how it's perhaps one of the kind of the best descriptions from Prabhupada that I ever, I like this very much. It says that love is already there in the heart. And in the beginning, somebody loves his parents, somebody loves his country, somebody may love his the whole world, but this desire, it's not fulfilled, it's not full, it's incomplete. But when somebody loves Krishna, then he loves everybody, and then this desire to love is fully manifested and it's complete. I paraphrase it really badly, but this is the essence there. So then you may think, okay, and perhaps which was the approach of the some educational programs in early ISKCON. Recently I watched the CD Children of Fear about Gurukul education in ISKCON, which was really bad. Then you may think, okay, the purpose of education is just to teach children how to love God, or living entities how to love God, and everything else is just trivial, not important. Because ultimately, from an ultimate point of view, it just doesn't matter. What's the purpose of quantum mechanics or Gokulananda Ki? So you may think, what's the purpose of all this? Learning math, arithmetic, economics, politics. It's just trivial. But I found a very, very interesting purport of Srila Prabhupada in first canto, where he describes, the verse describes that all these different sciences have a purpose and have a meaning. This is from first canto, chapter 5, verse number 22. This is the verse. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of the hymns, and charity, culminates in transcendental description of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. And then in purport, Prabhupada writes, when advancement of knowledge is applied in the service of the Lord, then the whole process becomes absolute. The personality of Godhead and his transcendental name, fame, glory, etc., are all none different from him. Therefore, all the sages and devotees of the Lord had recommended that the subject matter of art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, and all other branches of knowledge should be wholly and solely applied in the service of the Lord. Art, literature, poetry, painting, etc., may be used in glorifying Lord. The fiction writers, poets, and celebrated literateurs are generally engaged in writing of sensuous subject, but if they turn towards the service of the Lord, they can describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Valmiki was a great poet, and similarly Vyasadeva is a great writer, And both of them have absolutely engaged themselves in delineating the transcendental activities of the Lord, and by doing so have become immortal. Similarly, science and philosophy also should be applied in the service of the Lord. There is no use presenting dry speculative theories for sense gratification. Philosophy and science should be engaged to establish the glory of the Lord. Advanced people are eager to understand the absolute truth through the medium of science, and therefore a great scientist should endeavor to prove the existence of the Lord on a scientific basis. Good luck with that. Similarly, philosophical speculation should be utilized to establish the supreme truth as sentient and all-powerful. Similarly, all other branches of knowledge should always be engaged in the service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, also the same is affirmed. All knowledge not engaged in the service of the Lord is but nonsense. Real utilization of advanced knowledge is to establish the glories of the Lord, and that is the real import. Scientific knowledge engaged in the service of the Lord and all similar activities are all factually Hari Kirtan, or glorification of the Lord. So that's Kirtan. If the science, philosophy, art, painting is engaged in glorification of the Lord, Prabhupada says, are all factually Hari Kirtan. So that's the purpose of all things. By itself, it can be trivial, but if it's used for the right purpose, Prabhupada often gives the example of a knife. You can kill somebody with a knife, but the knife in the hands of an expert surgeon can save a life, can help somebody. So by itself, it's not good or bad, but how we use it. And that really determines the actual value of any science or any knowledge or any philosophy or any art. Hare Krishna. So I think we have some time for questions or comments or...